Hello and welcome to this edition of the KKFI Arts Magazine Show. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. Glad to have you with us on a kind of a dreary Monday here in the city as you listen to the Arts Magazine Show right here on KKFI. 90.1 FM, your community radio station, right here in Kansas City. This is the Arts Magazine Show, where we try to cover the art scene, part of the arts lineup, every week here on KKFI. We have Arts Magazine on Monday with me, guests from the artistic community. Maria Vasquez Boyd is on Wednesday. That's Art Speak Radio. She'll talk with the artist in town. There's a special showing at a gallery coming up or an event involving art. She'll be right on that. Charles Ferrugia is with you on Wednesdays at 12 o'clock noon. There's a pattern here. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 12 o'clock noon. And he'll have probably anything. They do a lot of restaurant stuff, naturally. Charles is a restaurant critic. They have a lost dog section. If you lost your dog, send a message to the radio station. That'll often get broadcast, as well as the latest garage sales in town. We cover it all, locally and regionally, here on KKFI. Well, welcome to the program. Today, we're going to talk to the Kansas City Ballet, and our friend Devin Carney is with us once again. He is the artistic director of the Kansas City Ballet. I can't say new anymore, because you've been here several years now.
That's right. Middle of my fourth year.
Wow.
Can you believe that?
Time goes quickly, doesn't it?
And enjoyably, too.
Yes. Devin, he's from New Orleans originally, the musical city, as I like to say, of New Orleans. As you walk down the French Quarter and other sections of the town, you hear music coming out of all the establishments, and sometimes different kinds of music. There's a radio station like ours down there, but they don't have a lot of talk. They have mostly music. See, you'll hear Zydeco during parts of the day. You'll hear traditional jazz, traditional blues at different times of the day. Very, very musical city, New Orleans. With Boston, with the Boston Ballet. Is that dancing and artistic directing as well in Boston?
Ballet Master. As well as directing their summer program for about 10 years.
And then Cincinnati as well. And this,
that's right.
And this, I say this because this plays a part in the interview, as we'll get to. Right. Christy Capps is with us as well. She is the Ballet Master of the Kansas City Ballet. Originally met Devin in Cincinnati.
Yes, that's correct.
You danced in other places as well?
I did. Atlanta Ballet was my first company, and then moved on to Cincinnati Ballet, where I was there for 15 seasons.
Yeah. Well, how long have you been here now? 4.5 also?
No, not quite 4.5. I'm on my third season with the company.
Yeah, because Devin told the story earlier that one of the first calls he made was to Christy Capps.
That's right. Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, we're going to talk about your show, Sleeping Beauty. It's on the boards now. It'll run Friday the 31st, which is coming right up. It's getting close, Devin. And it'll run through April the 9th. At the Kauffman Center, on the Muriel Kauffman side of the Kauffman Center. For those of you who don't know, and people have asked me about this, they have all these events. How do they work them all in? I said, well, there's two theaters. There's the Miller-Nichols side. The symphony usually will play there. There's the Muriel Kauffman side. The ballet, you know, the opera, they're on that other side as well. This is on the Muriel Kauffman side. It opens, I said, this Friday. Runs through April the 9th. It's called Sleeping Beauty, a show that Devin has a history with. He danced in that show years ago. Was it in Boston or Cincinnati?
Well, actually, it was in Boston. It is the first time I had the opportunity to dance in the full-length version of Sleeping Beauty. And then also, I mean, you could call it dance in Cincinnati. I had retired by that point because I was taking on more of a leadership role in a ballet company. You know, it's a short career. The athletic expectation level on a dancer is it takes its toll, just like any professional athlete. So, you know, I did 20 years of dancing. But then in Cincinnati, when I went there as both ballet master and then associate director, I had the great opportunity to continue to be able to perform character roles such as the king in the Sleeping Beauty, or Lord Capulet in Romeo and Juliet, or Drosselmeyer in the Nutcracker. So it was fun, you know, to be able to do those kind of roles. So, yeah, I mean, you could say I was dancing in Sleeping Beauty. I was actually on the stage in Cincinnati as the king when Christy Capps, who is here with us today, was dancing the lead role of Aurora, because she was one of Cincinnati Ballet's greatest principal dancers they've ever had, and led that company as a principal dancer for 10 of those 15 years. And, you know, that's been one of the most exciting parts about this process of bringing Sleeping Beauty here, is having someone of her stature by my side to be able to help the dancers, the women of the company, to really understand and appreciate the quality of that lead role of a Princess Aurora.
Sure. I can't help but notice you bring people you have a personal association with.
Yeah,
to,
you know,
come here. You've done that for a number of shows now.
That's true. That's actually true. And you know, it's kind of like if you know something has worked in the past, you know, you want to bring a high quality level of assistance to a production, because it just furthers the quality of that production. And Christy is a phenomenal teacher, coach, and former ballerina. And, you know, she's with us all the time. Oh, yeah. And that's what's so wonderful, is that I'm so fortunate, as is Kansas City Ballet, to have someone of her level in-house with us day in, day out. So, yes, I love to bring high-level coaches to every production we have, but to have Christy with us all the time, you know, we're quite fortunate to have that.
Yeah, was Christy excited? Well, that's not an unfair word. Were you happy about coming to Kansas City to be a ballet master?
Absolutely. It was a kind of a shock and more of an honor when Devin asked for me to join him with the company. They needed a ballet master at the time, and I came and assisted with Dracula. The company was performing Dracula, and then I came back as full-time for the following season. And it really honestly wasn't more than just being a move in logistics. It wasn't even a thought in my mind that I wouldn't want to join Devin and work with him again. He has been and still is a mentor to me. So being able to come here and work with his dancers and the wonderful dancers of Kansas City Ballet has just been quite an honor and wonderful.
Yeah, it involves relocating, of course.
Yes,
that's always
yes.
a pain, yep. as they say. But I'm sure you're glad you did.
I am. I'm grateful, yeah. very grateful.
Yeah. And so am I.
yeah, that's great. That's great. What exactly does, for those who don't know, I do now because I've had interviews before,
right.
what exactly does the ballet master do?
Well, we teach the company class, which every morning the dancers take an hour and a half ballet class. It's just to, you know, keep their muscles and their minds and their bodies in. It's a training, you know, and it gets them ready for our day. And then we have a 6-hour rehearsal day. So I'm in with them every hour of the day, working on whatever section of the ballet or whatever piece or whatever choreographic project that's being done on the company at that time. And I also do the scheduling for the dancers. But right now with Sleeping Beauty, I'm either coaching or I'm with Devin in a rehearsal. Right. You know, Devin, right now that we're in run-throughs, so we're working through the ballet in the studio, Devin will give me notes and of what little parts of the ballet needs to be cleaned up or fixed, and we will go through and help the dancers with that and make the performance better, make the ballet better.
Yes, sir. I can just hear Devin now. He's saying, well, you know, it's good, but it could be just a little bit better in this section. So, Christy.
that is the world of the arts, is that you're always trying to improve upon what you've done. And you just keep working toward, you know, a goal that you hope you probably will never actually reach, because there's a level of professionalism and expectation that you hope for. And, you know, you just keep pushing forward until you think you got it. And what's fascinating about this, you know, profession and this art form is that there's always one more little thing that you can work on.
Sure.
And that's the beauty of live performance, because every performance is going to be unique and its own special moment in time. And, you know, that's something I've grown to appreciate about what we do, is that, you know, as a ballet master or as an artistic director, or as a dancer, you're always just aspiring to perfection, but it's actually the process that's so enjoyable. You may never actually get to that moment, but that's the beauty of what we do.
But you strive for
that's
it all
right.
the time.
That's right.
And most of the time, I would say you succeed.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, Michael.
To a very great degree.
Thank you.
There was a wonderful article in yesterday's art section of The Star about Sleeping Beauty.
Oh, that's right.
And Devin. Devin's pretending he didn't know. But if you wonder what Devin looks like, well, you can go to their website, kcballet.org, or you can look at this article. There's a picture of Devin dancing with one of the dancers, helping her work things out. Mm-hmm. Do you often dance with them?
Well, that's something that I've always enjoyed doing. So, again, dance is kind of a quote-unquote sort of thing for me right now. I was always a good partner. I loved partnering. I used to partner Christy when she was a principal dancer with Cincinnati Ballet and created some really interesting roles. I wasn't officially called a dancer, right? But partnering for me is something that I'm very comfortable doing. And, you know, my arms don't hurt as bad as my knees do. So, partnering is really fun to do. And so, yes, I still dance with some of the dancers here in Cincinnati, Kansas City Ballet. In this particular case, I was working with the Aurora, and helping the Prince. Work on some partnering skills for him. His name, Lamine Pereira, and the Aurora, it was Tempe Austrian that I was working on that with. I'm a very physical person, and I have to move, and I have to get involved like that. I'm not a sitter, and I get very antsy sitting, so I'd rather be up on my feet doing things and helping in any way I can. And it's also, it is a teaching profession. We pass it on generation to generation. And sometimes the best thing you can do is just, as best as you can, as the one teaching or coaching, is do it and show and demonstrate. You know, it's not something you learn out of a book, this art form. It is very much a hands-on sort of passing on of the tradition. And that's what the beauty of Sleeping Beauty is to talk about passing on a tradition. Goodness, we're talking about 127-year-old ballet that is going on the stage at the Kaufman Center on Friday of this week.
It's amazing. I always find it amazing. Some of those shows have been produced publicly for many, many years. Mm-hmm. And it's always a challenge for both of you, really, to come up with maybe a different twist on things. Before we get into that, though, the story of Sleeping Beauty. People think they know it, but there's always a little twist. So would one of you like to give a once-over on Sleeping Beauty? Would Christy like to?
I mean, I can do it if you want to do it. You want to go for it? We can share. We'll do it together.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I think one thing that's unique about this story of Sleeping Beauty, or of the story of Sleeping Beauty, the ballet, is that many ballets are two or three acts. And ours, although we have one intermission, it's essentially really four acts. So there's a lot. It's a lot in telling of the story. Mm-hmm. Yes, there is the prince and they fall asleep for, there's the evil witch Carabosse and the lilac fairy that's the good fairy. And there's the traditional story, but I think there's a lot of extra additional characters that are involved in the telling of the story, which is very unique to this ballet.
She was asleep for 100 years, but then she didn't seem to age at all.
No, because Lilac Fairy put her into this enchanted spell because, Carabosse was not happy. She was a fairy, and her character, unfortunately, the king forgot to invite her to the birthday celebration of the birth of Aurora, Princess Aurora,
their daughter.
Don't
do that, folks. Don't forget somebody.
Always check your list twice. So she came in a rage and was so vengeful and upset about the fact she wasn't invited that she put a curse on Aurora, that if that she would grow to be 16 years old, and on that day that she would prick her finger with a knitting needle, it would cause her to die. Well, Lilac Fairy, of course, said, well, no. True, there is some sort of spell that must happen, but she mitigated it a bit and said, she won't die. She'll fall asleep until Aurora finds a prince with a true heart who gives her a kiss and wakes her up. And it so happens it's 100 years before that happens.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. And in the meantime, the castle grounds are overgrown with vines and the woods grow up. So there's, the whole grounds are disguised. So it's hard to find the grounds, And then that prince comes along, led by Lilac Fairy, to the castle grounds and has to, of course, battle Karabas in order to vanquish the evilness that surrounds the castle. And then kisses Aurora, and they wake up, and, well, you know the rest of the story. They live happily ever after.
Now, that's quite a grudge. To hold that grudge for 100 years and still be holding on to it.
That's right.
You would have thought after 30 or 40 years, would have let that go.
Yeah. Well, you know, some people just don't know how to forgive. So.
Yeah, I suppose so. Who are some of the dancers in the show you'd like to talk about?
Well, there's some visitors, I suppose we could say, to the third act.
Oh, right.
To the ball, the wedding ceremony that maybe are not in the traditional Disney story that everyone is so accustomed to.
Right.
So we have Little Red Riding Hood and the White Cat and Puss in Boots.
Right. And they're based on Brothers Grimm's fairy tales.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just like in Nutcracker, we have different lands that are represented that come to visit Clara in the Land of the Sweets. Well, in Sleeping Beauty, it's these different tales, you know, these fairy tales. Just like Sleeping Beauty is a fairy tale that is somewhat based on Brothers Grimm's fairy tales. And so is the fact that these different characters, what was the other one? Bluebird. And the Princess Florine. So there's a lot of that fairy tale sort of aspect that goes on throughout the whole ballet.
Did the Brothers Grimm often weave some of those stories together?
That's a great question, Michael. Maybe next time we're together, I might have an answer for you. I don't know. I mean, you know, Mother Goose, I think there was a lot of crossover in those stories.
Sure. Yeah.
So maybe, you know. But this is definitely part of the story that all these different fairy tale characters from different stories come together for this celebration of Aurora's wedding.
Yes.
The other cool thing about Sleeping Beauty, unlike, let's say, Swan Lake, which of course is another extremely well-known work in the classical repertoire, is that Sleeping Beauty, Christy was saying that there's a prologue, there's Act 1, Act 2, and Act 3. And what's very different about this ballet as opposed to Swan Lake, because Swan Lake occurs basically in a 24-hour period, maybe 48-hour period, the whole ballet. Well, Sleeping Beauty occurs over at least 116 years. We go from Aurora's birth in prologue to her 16th birthday in Act 1 to an unknown time in Act 2 where Lilac Fairy introduces the prince in a vision of Aurora. And then finally, at the end of Act 2, she's awakened, and that's, we know that to be at least 100 years based on the fairy tale. And then probably a week or two go by, I would expect, between the awakening and the wedding ceremony, which is Act 3. So you're dealing with a large expanse of time, which is kind of fun to take this adventure of this baby who grows into this beautiful princess who then goes through a lot of difficulties and then finally, you know, through adversity, finds her true love and gets married and becomes a woman. So it's a really cool story from the princess's point of view.
Yeah, in the paper, you were quoted as saying that Sleeping Beauty was even more of a challenge than Swan Lake.
You know, it is. And thus the reason that, there was a very definite process of doing Swan Lake first. It's a huge challenge, Swan Lake, because it really identifies the corps de ballet, because the unison work that Christy was phenomenal at getting them ready for in Swan Lake, it really unified the women of the company, especially in their corps work. But in Sleeping Beauty, it's so many different scenes. It's huge, the number of scenes that go on and the number of roles that each dancer has to do over the course of the show. Because, like I said, there's prologue, Act 1, Act 2, Act 3. There are dancers who do something different in prologue, Act 1, Act 2, Act 3. So, you know, that's a lot more shifting of characters in your mind that you have to do. But that's fun, you know, and the company's ready for this. They're strong. They're versatile. They have taken this challenge head on and are doing a phenomenal job. And, you know, Christy's been really in there every day, along with our other ballet master, Parrish Maynard, as well as some help from our second company manager, Anthony Kreutzkamp. It's a huge team effort to put this on, and we also have children in the show as well. 40-some children that are in each cast, and we have two ballet masters who are children's ballet masters who are involved in that process as well. So, I mean, you count that up, you're already looking at an artistic team of, if you include me, of course, that's six different individuals putting their artistic eye on the program.
Yeah, I guess that those are children from your children's ballet company?
They are, from the Kansas City Ballet Academy.
Sure.
Yeah.
We're speaking with Devin Carney, their artistic director, and Christy Capps, the ballet master of the Kansas City Ballet. We're talking about Sleeping Beauty, the show that's going to be opening this Friday, March 31st, at the Muriel Kaufman side of the Kaufman Center for the Performing Arts. Performances continue on Saturday the 4th, Saturday, April 1st, 4 is the month, at 7:30 p.m., then a matinee on Sunday the 2nd at 2 o'clock p.m. Performances then move to the next week, Thursday the 6th at 7:30, Friday the 7th at 7:30, Saturday the 8th, two performances, mm-hmm. What I have down.
That's right.
2 o'clock in the afternoon, a matinee on the 8th, then again at 7:30 p.m. on the 8th, and it closes on the 9th with a 2 o'clock p.m. Afternoon matinee performance of the Kansas City Ballet. The number to call for more information is 816-931-8993, or online, of course, at kcballet.org. I wanted to ask you about the costumes.
Oh, sure.
And the history.
Yeah.
These costumes are well-traveled, mm-hmm. So you must think they're very good.
Yep.
And you know,
they're sturdy.
Sturdy.
They're built well. They have a really beautiful history, which, you know, we were talking about, well, when did I first do Sleeping Beauty? It was with Boston Ballet. And it's really crazy that, and I just discovered this when we rented the costumes. These are rented from Cincinnati Ballet, where they own them in Cincinnati. And that's very typical that companies rent costumes and sets from other places to put on their first production of a full length. I mean, hopefully someday we'll have our own sets and costumes that we build. But for the first time out, it's fine to do it this way. And I know that the sets and costumes are good. So I get the costumes. You know, they were shipped, and because we had a lot of fittings that had to be done. You know, over 100 rolls. And I was just checking through the racks of costumes to look to make sure, okay, we've got six of this, and okay, we've got eight of those, and right, we've got, you know, 16 women, nymphs, and okay, and we've got, you know, six mazurka couples, la 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 la. And then I noticed a name tag on one of the costumes. I went, well, that's funny, that's somebody I knew in my Boston Ballet days. But I'm like, oh no, that can't be. And so then I'm going along through some other things, and I see another name from my Boston Ballet days, and I'm like, wait a minute. And I look through more. I'm like, oh, that's Victor. And oh my goodness, that's Carl. And oh, that's Arthur. And these are all dancers from when I was a kid, when I first got to Boston Ballet, when I first did Sleeping Beauty. And so then it dawned on me that these costumes were the costumes that Boston Ballet bought from the Royal Ballet, because they were built for the Royal Ballet. Uh-huh. They're Peter Farmer sets and costumes, which are, frankly, he's one of the most wonderful designers for classical work, which you'll see when it's on stage. But they were bought from the Royal Ballet, and then after, when Boston Ballet then bought the next production from the Royal Ballet, Boston Ballet sold the costumes and sets to Cincinnati Ballet.
Aha.
So then when I'm in Cincinnati and I get my chance to, well, I performed in these as the King, remember, with Christy Capps when she was Aurora, and then you know, I got to do my first telling of the full-length version of it, where I was able to stage my ideas of it for Cincinnati. And then I rented them to do it here in Kansas City Ballet. So ironically, my entire experience of Sleeping Beauty has always been with these sets and costumes from when I was 20 years old until present. And it's kind of really beautiful in a way, that lineage that has strung through all these different experiences I've had between three companies. And each one of these companies, you know, it was different, but still, it was quite lovely to be doing such a world-renowned great classic.
Oh, sure. And the costumes and set are now of a historical nature.
They are. That's right. Yeah. And, you know, that I think it's important to just mention, you know, about the role of the magnitude of being able to do Sleeping Beauty on a company is quite important, and something that I'm really proud of Kansas City Ballet and how they're able to now have this chance to do this, because, you know, this is a landmark work for any ballet company. You got to remember, this is, we didn't talk about this earlier, this is the first time that Kansas City Ballet is doing, in its 59-year history, the full-length version of Sleeping Beauty. So this is a significant moment, just like Swan Lake was last year, to bring this classical work to the stage here for Kansas City audiences. But I just think it'd be lovely to hear from Christy. I know our time might be getting short. That the significance of being able to do the role of Aurora, and Christy has danced it many times, and I've witnessed her grow in the role over the times that she performed it in Cincinnati. From a ballerina's point of view, you know, dancers are attracted to companies for one reason. Typically, the one big reason is, what does that company do? What kind of ballets do they do? And this is a major milestone in any ballerina's life to have the chance to do the role of Princess Aurora. I'd love to hear from Christy, if that's okay, Michael.
Oh, sure.
What's that like? Yeah. Yeah. What's the significance of the role?
Yes, it's iconic. It's very iconic. And all of Act One is, it's basically Aurora's act. I mean, she enters, and once she's entered, she's rarely off the stage until she pricks her finger. And quote unquote goes to sleep. There's, you know, the most famous Rose Adagio, which
That's
is
right.
a very technical and challenging feat, where there's, you know, there's four suitors that she is supposed to choose from in order to marry, and they all have a rose, and she on one leg for a very long amount of time, you could say, you know, is standing on that one leg, and, you know, and is given a rose at times, and it's one of those, I think, because it's such an iconic ballet, and also say the Rose Adagio is such a challenge. There sometimes is that, dare I say, fear, because you know of the wonderful Margot Fonteyn and these wonderful ballerinas that, you know, made Sleeping Beauty and made the Rose Adagio so famous. I mean, you know, people think of Black Swan, they think of the 32 fouettes at the end. You know, you say Sleeping Beauty and they think of Rose Adagio right away. I mean, it's one of the most famous parts of Sleeping Beauty. So for Aurora, for the female that is doing Aurora, Rose Adagio is that iconic challenge that, you know, is so exciting to have the opportunity to learn and to, dare I say, conquer.
Sure.
it's a beautiful ballet. And again, you know, like Devin said, you go from being a teenager, you have to find that young, youthful innocence, and to a woman who has found her prince and is to marry.
Sure.
So you do get to go through that process of a character as well.
Sure. Well, thank you both for being with us. Sleeping Beauty, a production of the Kansas City Ballet, opens this Friday, the 31st. Do you always get excited when it's a few days before?
Yes, I do. It's a sleepless excitement.
Sure. Performances continue April the 1st, Saturday, Sunday the 2nd. The Sunday performances are always a matinee. Then the next week, the 6th, the 7th. At 7:30, Saturday the 8th, two performances that day, 2 o'clock p.m. And 7:30 closes out on Sunday the 9th with a matinee at 2 o'clock p.m. kcballet.org, and the number you can call if you're better on the phone. You like to talk to people. 816-931-8993. Performances of the Kansas City Ballet. I want to thank my guests. We've talked our way out of time. Devin Carney, the Artistic Director of the Kansas City Ballet, thanks once again for being with us. And Christy Capps, the Ballet Master of the Kansas City Ballet, after performing for 10 years, dancing in Cincinnati.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Thanks so much, both of you, for being with us. We're going to take a short break now. When we return, we're going to talk about the Jewish Community Center, the J, as they call it, some of the shows there. They're doing a show, Fahrenheit 451, has a lot of meaning to it, and we'll talk about all of that when we return. You're listening to the Arts Magazine radio program right here on KFI, 90.1 FM. And welcome back to the Arts Magazine show right here on KKFI 90.1 FM, your community radio station right here in Kansas City. I'm Michael Hogue, your host. We're going to journey down south of here, quite a ways, actually, to the Jewish Community Center of Kansas City. The theater down there is called The J. And with us to talk about all that they have going on down there is Jonathan Jensen. He is the Director of Arts and Culture for the Jewish Community Center. They have a show that's running or is about to open. I don't have the dates in front of me right now. Fahrenheit 451, a show of historical value insofar as the themes of the show are concerned. Welcome to the show, Jonathan.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having us on.
Big job down there. You have a nice theater.
Oh, it's a tremendous space. The Lewis and Shirley White Theater is a beautiful, beautiful 500-seat proscenium-style theater that we have at the Jewish Community Center. So we're very fortunate to have that opportunity and to perform in such a wonderful location.
When I was a much younger man, I performed at the center, but it was located between Holmes and Troost many years ago.
Yeah, that's, I think it was the Resident Theater then.
It was called the Resident Theater, yes.
Yeah.
But things have really changed. You move further west, and in previous interviews, I've been told that the population that populated the center moved west. So the theater, the whole center actually moved west along with it, located now, what?
We're at 115th and Knoll. That's the closest intersection, and our whole campus is down there. We've got a tremendous facility that houses not only the arts and culture and our theater program, but also our fitness and sports and our early childhood development center, and so many other activities that take place at the center. And it's just really a tremendous place to experience whatever's going on.
Yeah, and as I was told in previous interviews by one of your predecessors, you don't have to be Jewish to join the Jewish Community Center?
Absolutely not. It's welcome to the community. I mean, we have so many different opportunities for everybody to participate. And it's just a wonderful place to spend your day, whether you're a part of our Heritage Center, where folks come in and they spend their days and afternoons in community and exercising and playing cards and doing things like that, to coming to see a show or a film that we've got in our wonderful theater down there. So many different things that we have for all kinds of folks to participate.
We had a nice interview a little while back about the Jewish Film Festival. That was very nice.
Yeah, the film festival celebrated its 18th year this last year. And in fact, we have a couple more films coming up, one in May at the Tivoli, Melting Away, and then another one in August at a Broadway, a Crossroads venue that's just going to be a spot. We'll be showing Mr. Gaga, all about dance. I mean, of course, had the ballet in here, and it should be a really wonderful film. Both are ancillary pieces to the film festival that we have, and then our 19th festival will kick off next spring.
Oh, sure. Yeah, as I said earlier, it's a nice facility, and it really is very well equipped. One of the critics was in here one time, and he told me, you know, that with the beauty of the facility on the inside and the kinds of equipment you have, you rival even some of the major professional companies in town.
Absolutely.
With what you have.
We sure do. We can put on some of the best shows in town, in my opinion, and our space is very well equipped. The theater's only 10 years old, or it's in fact 12 years old, but it's fairly new compared to a lot of the other spaces in town, and we really have some tremendous capabilities. If you've seen any of our summer shows, Mary Poppins was a huge and tremendous success last year with all the moving parts and the fun places to go within the different chalk drawings, if you can imagine, hopping from Bert's location to location.
Sure.
And in fact, right now with Fahrenheit 451, our scenery and our set that our whole production team has worked on is really exciting. I mean, it incorporates all kinds of different technical elements, from our projections to moving set pieces, and it's a beautiful show.
And yes, Mary Poppins did fly. She flew at both the center and when performances continued over at Theater in the Park.
Yeah.
She flew as well.
She sure did.
You did a collaboration the last couple of years, I think. Mm-hmm. You did both places. Are you going to be doing that again?
We will. This summer, we'll be collaborating with Theater in the Park again on our upcoming production of Beauty and the Beast. East. So for 2 weeks, or 3 weeks, I'm sorry, we'll be at the White Theater the first weekend in July. And then we'll run 3 weeks in our space, and then they'll go 2 weeks over at the park. And it's just a wonderful opportunity for both of our organizations to collaborate and bring such a beautiful piece of theater together. I mean, that's what we're all about. We're, you know, collaborating and celebrating different theatrical arts. And, you know, the team over at the park is fabulous, and they're wonderful to work with.
As I understand it, you also have a collaboration working with, is it the Coterie?
That's right. That's the big announcement for next year, too. For the first time, we'll be able to co-produce a show with the Coterie Theater next summer. And we'll be one of the first theaters in the country to present Newsies, Disney's musical about the paper boys and unionizing. And that'll be the summer of 18 that we'll get to work with the Coterie on. We're very excited about that.
Yeah. Are you going to continue your one with Theater in the Park as well?
Or? Yeah, we are.
So you're branching out quite a bit?
We are. The park is we've been great partners for the last few years, and we don't see that partnership changing at all. This next summer is just going to shift it a little bit. I know they're working really hard on their new Arts and Culture Center, and so yes, they've got a lot of things on their plate. And but we're always going to be interested and open to collaborating with the park, and we're really excited for their new building to open up and to see all the shows and performances that they've got scheduled for their new space.
I thought it was a challenge to do the show, and it was broken up. There were the shows at the J, that's the name of the theater at the Jewish Community Center. We were told to call it the J from now on, so I guess you've branded that.
We have branded. The Jewish Community Center is now the J.
Okay. You did a show inside for some performances, and then you would move over to Theater in the Park and do the same show. And
mm-hmm. Same cast.
With outside as well for a week or two as well.
Yeah.
Was that challenging for a director and yourself to do two of them, essentially twice as long a run?
You know, it's really great, I think, for the different groups. I mean, the complicated part, of course, is moving a show and taking it and picking it up where it's been for a few weeks and where it's been built. But our production team is so strong, and they plan ahead for all those things, so they make sure they can take it apart like a jigsaw puzzle and put it all right back together again. And how it fits in both spaces is really an incredible process to see. And of course, I'm fairly new in my role as well, so I'm excited to see the process for the first time in my position since I've been here starting in October. And Beauty and the Beast will be the first one I get to see firsthand, and how it all changes over from one space to the next. So that'll be really fun.
So this summer, then, you'll have a chance to see it in either place. Maybe you want to see it in both to see how, if it's different. But you'll be able to see Beauty and the Beast midsummer sometime?
First weekend in July is when it opens at the J, and we'll run for 3 weeks there. And then it'll be the last week in July and the first week of August at the park.
At the park.
Yeah.
So it'll be probably a lot cooler inside than outside, but we don't know yet.
Yeah, that's usually the case in Kansas City summers that I've experienced. But yeah, it'll be a great production wherever you see it.
Oh, sure. Yes. I was fortunate. I traveled to the Middle East, to Jerusalem. I saw some of the artistic things there, the Holocaust Museum and all of that. And the center is very involved.
Oh, yeah. Like we have you know, our own Midwest Center for Holocaust Education at the J. It's a separate organization, but they're in the campus building that we have, and they're a partner. They were a partner on our film festival, and have done a lot of things to help the Arts and Culture Department out over the years, and they're just a wonderful group to have present in the building and to be educating your community about all those different events that happened.
Yes, it's like I said, it's a beautiful facility, and it can be made bigger if need be.
Oh yeah, there's a wonderful campus.
There's a partition, I guess a curtain, and I was told that curtain could be moved aside, and there's even more seats higher up.
Yeah, we have the theater is very flexible, and like I said earlier, it's a 500 seat theater, but for our play right now, for example, Fahrenheit 451, we only have half of the theater available for seating, so you make it a really nice, intimate setting for everybody to come in, pack in there, and really have a close encounter with all the activity that's going on stage. But then when we want to expand it for some of those larger shows, like our big musicals, and especially for Beauty and the Beast later on in the summer, or you know, our other performances with Kansas City Chorale that's coming in April, and Jana Robbins, a Broadway actor, producer, director, she'll be here in May. With those bigger performances, of course, we'll open it up to the full 500 seats. And it has just the same capabilities of the Spencer Theater, serve with the rep. So it's a great space, and I'm very proud, and we're all very proud and at the opportunity to showcase what we can do there. And
they, as Jonathan said, they have one-night performances sometimes of people as they're making a tour, generally coming through town. But you also have some really interesting shows. You had not all that long ago a night with Dr. Ruth. I forget the exact title.
Yeah, Becoming Dr. Ruth. That was here in September for two nights. Yeah, she had came down and was visiting the St. Louis Jay over there, and then came our direction and sat down with us for a couple of days, and that was great to have her in our theater too. We're always pleased to have those different folks touring the country. It's great.
Now, the actual Dr. Ruth is still among the living, as I understand it, and she was a member of the Israeli military, someone told me. Is that correct?
I'm not sure. I'm the wrong person to ask on that one.
That's what I was told. Yeah. I was said she really was. I got that information from the lady that's at the New Theater.
Oh, okay.
Because she has performed that role, I guess, on stage at times. In fact, I think she said she was a sharpshooter. I thought, that small woman
we've heard so much over the years. Yes, that is right.
Was actually a trained to fire with the Israeli army over there.
She's a sharpshooter.
So a lot different business than what she's in now, but she's mostly retired. But I think, and the show is past, so I shouldn't dwell on that so much. But it may return sometime. But sounds like an interesting show.
Oh, it was great to have on our stage. Yeah,
You would probably rather I ask you about Fahrenheit 451, and I'm going to now. Last Friday, someone asked me, have you talked to anyone from the Jay about that show yet? And I said, no, not yet. And they said, is this rumor true that they're going to actually burn some books on stage? I said, I kind of doubt it, but Jonathan.
We opened on Saturday, and we're running this week, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday. So we have three performances left of Fahrenheit 451, and it's just a tremendous, tremendous piece of theater, and so timely. If you're one of those individuals who was, I guess, not forced, but was encouraged to read it when you were in high school or middle school, of the topics are so very relevant today with the censorship and the containing of knowledge that people don't want to be spread to the general public so that you can control a population. It's just a very interesting story that follows, you know, Guy Montag and his curiosity for learning more and what's out in the world, and especially how it relates to classical literature, too. You know, we've got a great cast. Robert Hengila, who's been on our stage numerous times, is performing, and is directed by Bill Christie. And Bill has done a wonderful job of bringing the piece to life with our other actors and crew that are on stage.
Bill was with the American Heartland Theater for a number of years.
He was, and he's also with the Coterie Theater right now, too. So he's a tremendous individual, and we're so pleased to have him on our team for this show.
Will he be a big part of that collaboration?
Yeah, he will. And Bill also serves as our properties designer, too, so he's around quite a bit as a member of the production team, helping with all the different things that accompany our productions, from the suitcases that somebody brings on to a pocket watch or anything along those lines. Yes. Bill helps curate that.
Yeah, so sometimes I think when people overlay, and as you said, it's happening today. There is talk of some websites perhaps being limited or banned because of supposedly fake news they have, but we don't know. You don't know. But isn't it better, controversy coming out of my mouth, isn't it better to let everyone be exposed to everything and decide for themselves?
Well, you know, that is the great debate, of course. There was a really interesting discussion that we were having yesterday, in fact. On our Sunday matinee performances at 1 o'clock, we have a representative from the Johnson County Library who is leading a group discussion about the book and what the themes still mean to us today. And there was a very interesting conversation about when is censorship good and when is it an appropriate time to limit certain knowledge from individuals to either help, like I said earlier, control the population, and when is it totally forbidden, or where along that spectrum does it fall, and where is it appropriate? And you make a great point about the internet today, about how it is spreading like wildfire, and, you know, not to use a pun, but there are certain things that can take over a conversation because of how much interest it's getting on online nowadays. And I think that is still so relevant to the book and the production, even though it very much focuses on the burning of books and the containing of that information. And,
but that's the era it was written in. So
yeah,
it would have been
books. Yeah, it would have been books then. It was 1953, and Ray Bradbury said it in the not-so-distant future where they're, you can't see cars because the speed at which they're driving is so fast that they're just a blur, and you, for fear of walking across the street and being killed, no one crosses the sidewalk.
This is true.
You know, billboards are 150 feet long now because no one can see the information that would have been on a normal size billboard today, of course, because everybody's driving so quickly. But, you know, it's just a really interesting way to think of the dystopian nature of the society that Bradbury wrote about. And it's one of probably the darker novels that project what's happening in the future. If you think of like a 1984 or any of those other books, there was still maybe a hint or a glimmer of hope. And I don't want to say that there isn't a glimmer of hope in this, because there is, and not to give any plot points, but there are opportunities that you can see society wanting to move forward and still progress as a community despite the restrictions that are placed on the individuals.
Yeah, that's a great point. We've talked in generalities about it. For the next minute or so, a thumbnail sketch of the storyline, if you could.
Yeah, of course. Well, like I said earlier, the story follows our main character, Guy Montag, who's a fireman. And in the future, firemen's jobs are no longer to put out fires, but to set fires to books and to things that contain knowledge. And Guy, throughout the story, is questioning why we're doing this and why would we be restricting this information from getting out into the community, and especially from something as simple as A Tale of Two Cities, which he starts reading as it's forbidden. And in the society, you can possess a book, but it's illegal to read the book. And as soon as you read the book, that becomes the crime that's been committed. And he starts to read. And at that point in time, he is targeted by this by whoever is in charge, the people who shall remain nameless, and he leaves and he finds a community of individuals to to support his wishes and to see how they can continue living a intellectual life beyond the restrictions that are placed on them.
Yeah. Interesting show, don't you think?
Very interesting. It runs, like I said, through Sunday, the 2nd.
Through Sunday the 2nd. Basically, give the people an idea of what a week is like. There's never a show on Friday, of course. That is the Jewish Sabbath. Mm-hmm. But basically, what days of the week are the shows?
So typically, our shows run Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday. And that's the case with this production right now. And it'll close on Sunday. But we also have a couple opportunities to learn more about the production as well. On Thursday night and Saturday night following the production, we'll have talkbacks with the actors afterwards to talk about what we're discussing right now and what their choices were like in the world that they were living in. And then we'll also have one more opportunity with the Johnson County Public Library to discuss the themes of the novel with a representative from their team prior to the show. So you can come, learn a little more, and then see the show at 2 o'clock on Sunday following that discussion. But usually our shows are Thursdays, Saturdays, and Sundays. And when we have a couple more productions coming up later on in this season, the KZ Corral will be here on Sunday, April 9th. They'll be joining us for a really exciting performance, and I encourage everybody to check that out on our website, which is thewhitetheater.org. And then we were discussing Jana Robbins, who's also coming in on May 5th and 6th, which is a Saturday night and a Sunday afternoon. And she'll be performing her one-woman cabaret that just performed off-Broadway at Feinstein's 54 Below in New York. And she'll have a really, really wonderful set of Broadway classics, hits, and different characters that she's played during her career, and will be here for the weekend to showcase her talents on stage. Yeah.
Sure. Let me clarify that. You want them to go to thewhitetheater.org?
Thewhitetheater.org.
I previously had thejkc.
And you'll still find it at thejkc.org. Thewhitetheater.org is just a little more of a direct path to get people where they need to go and if they want to see specifically information about the theater. But of course, the JKC has all of our programs and activities on there. For everybody to explore and learn more about.
Do you also have a box office number?
We do have a box office number. It's 913-327-8054, and it's open from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. Monday through Friday, and at 90 minutes prior to each performance.
Yeah, and so if they do want to walk up, do you recommend that? Is it going to be a tight enough crowd?
I always call ahead. I always make reservations ahead of time because you never know, and I encourage everybody to either visit our website or call Hunter. He's on the line right now, ready to take your call.
Good for him.
And he'll take care of you.
Okay, the location, that's important. It's down near the Sprint campus. As I park in that back parking lot, where so much happened, unfortunately, you can see the campus, the parking garage of the Sprint.
Yeah. So you can access our campus either on 115th or 117th Street right off of Knoll. So it's really close to the Town Center Plaza. So go have dinner and then come over and see us on Thursday, Saturday, or Sunday this week. But the address is 5801 115th Street in Overland Park.
Sure. Now, do you want to get into the 8 days commemoration?
Well, that celebration's coming up later on in April, and we're really excited to be a part of that too. There are a lot of activities that are going on in celebration with that event, and again, I just encourage everybody to visit our website to see all the different things that are planned for all those activities.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there, so you have a lot of responsibility on your shoulders. How far ahead of time do you pick a season? So you always have a big musical in the middle of the summer.
We do, and I'm very pleased to say we just finalized our 2017-2018 season. We let our audience members know on Saturday night. In fact, they got a sneak peek, but I'm happy to share it with everybody right now. We're going to open next season with Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein. So a classic comedy. One of my favorite films, of course, turned into a musical not too many years ago. So we're very excited for that. We have a new play that we're going to present called The Sarah Play. It's the part of the Inheritance Project and a new play. And the playwright will be joining our community 3 or 4 times over the course of the next 6 months, 8 months to write the play and decide what's important to the Kansas City community. And then we'll present it in December. Following that, we have Yid Life Crisis, a comedy duo from Montreal who has a web series and is going to come in, do some stand-up and do their shtick and perform for us in January. And that's followed by the 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. Miracle Worker in the spring around this time again. Wiesenthal will have Open Stage at the J, which is following a very successful inaugural choreography event that happened just a few weeks ago in our space. We featured 9 local dance companies that came down and performed with us, and we're going to do that again next year and add that to the season because it was such a wonderful event. And then, like we talked about earlier, we're going to end our season with a bang and collaborate with the Coterie Theater on the Newsies.
Yeah. Well, you always do shows. They're entertaining as well, but you often do shows of a historic nature as well. The show that you did last year about the children who...
Kinder Transport.
And I was also told that Dr. Ruth, the lady we know as Dr. Ruth, was also one of those children. I don't know, maybe that should be confirmed, but that's what I was told.
Yeah, and you know, what we try and do down at our theater, of course, we have a mission of, you know, entertaining, educating, and enlightening everybody that's within the context and the framework of celebrating Jewish culture, identity, and heritage. And we're really proud to be a theater of conscience, and we try our best to make sure that many of the productions that we put on have historical relevance or really speak to the community in a way that maybe not isn't presented currently. You know, of course, we're also going to put on a really big, fun show at the same time, but we really strive to make opportunities available for people to have a really engaging and enlightening experience at our theater.
And you do that as well. I want to thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you. It was really a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, Fahrenheit 450 run runs through this Sunday at the J. The number to call for more information is 913-327-8054. And the website that Jonathan wants you to check out, thewhitetheater.org. Thanks so much for being with us. Jonathan Jensen, the Director of Arts and Culture. Big job. It's getting bigger all the time.
Fun.
They're making it bigger
fun.
For you.
Yep, it's a great job.
Of the Jewish Community Center. Fahrenheit 451 and many others shows coming up as well. You need to check that out online as well. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
The Jazz Insider is coming up next. There's going to be jazz. KKFI is known, of course, for its jazz and blues. Jazz from 1 to 3, then the blues will come and take over. Blues from 3 to 6 right here on your community radio station, 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City's community radio. So until next we meet, ladies and gentlemen, at that crossing the road, I'm Michael Hoag. We'll see you.